The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Max Radio. Your chance to have your say. We're open line today through till 1 o'clock, so call 66 13 68. Text or WhatsApp 166 177. Email studio at maxradio.com. What is going on in Peel, by the way? What on earth is going on? And by the way, when you hear them say the vote on the beach stage, they're not standing on stage on the beach and voting. The beach stage is a live music stage on the beach for local performers. It was reported that they were set to trial a live music stage on Peel Beach for performers. Said the structure is going to be available from May to September, and it's in partnership with the Man in Music Shop. It's due to cost the commissioners £10,000, including additional audio equipment, which will be situated between the kiosk and the sailing club. So at that time, the lead member for Recreation, Katrina Baptist, said the trial's part of a wider plan to encourage development and investment in the town. So there we are. That's that situation. The owners of Man in Music Shop put a post on social media saying they've been thinking about doing this for a couple of years. They really want to provide more accessible live music. They approached the Commissioner's Events Committee, who said they love the idea and have worked really hard to get it off the ground. They said, as Peel residents and business owners, we want what's best for Peel, whether our business benefits or not. A beach stage will provide free quality entertainment for Peel residents and attract more people to Peel. Tons of great plans for the stage and lots of people are excited about it. They've also addressed the fallout, saying we hope the town hall can resolve their issues and differences and communicate with us so that we can get the necessary licenses and permissions that are needed within the next week so we can ensure the stage is ready for TT. We'll see. That's that situation. So the vote on the Peel beach stage is actually a vote about the Peel. Get it? Got it? Good. Right, let's get to the lines. Lots of messages I didn't get to yesterday, and I'll try and get to them today. In the meantime, Julian's on Man in Line. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. I think Peel Beach might be a bit chilly today. I see the wind chill. It's 3 Celsius outside, but the wind chill is -5 at the moment. It's a bit nippy, isn't it?
Well, that's nothing for the Isle of Man, is it? Just put an extra jumper on.
That's right, yeah. I quite agree. A few layers, you'd be fine. It was great to hear Terry Lydiard on the show yesterday, talking about how Manx Airlines grew to be the largest regional airline in Europe. That was something to have a bit of pride about, wasn't it, Andy?
Well, it was fantastic. And pride is one of those things, I have to say, that when you used to go to Heathrow or Luton or anywhere like that, and the Manx Airlines plane was there, it sent a little shiver up your spine. It was fantastic. It was a splurge of national pride. Of course, most of the planes were tiny alongside the planes at Heathrow, but it was national pride. And as you say, it's worth restating Manx Airlines credentials. 750 people employed on the Isle of Man in the aviation world.
Yeah, and I remember, I mean, I went on the short 360s and all the other, and you know, the uniforms were so smart as well. You know, it really stood out from everyone else. It was just great. But it did beg the question about, should we have our own airline or not? I think Robert raised that, and Howard was talking about it. So I had a look at what's happening at Guernsey's airline, Aurini, which I think was mentioned yesterday. So Aurini had an old fleet of mixed-type aircraft, but they've been replacing and simplifying the fleet so that it's easier for pilot training and the repairs are quicker, cheaper and more efficient. And they've been buying new de Havilland and ATR aircraft. The ATR's fitted with the Clear Vision, you know, see-through-the-fog system, which has been dropping their flight cancellations in low visibility by over 50%. So that system's working really well for them. I noticed in 2022, Aurini made over 3 million profit. In 2023, they made a 1.7 million profit. But last, in 2024, they made a loss of $6.5 million.
Yeah.
But the reason for the loss was due to delayed delivery of new aircraft that they were waiting for to replace the old ones. So because Orini had already sold off the old aircraft, it was necessary for them to expensively wet lease temporary aircraft during the delivery gap, because they'd already got rid of the old stuff, expecting the new ones in.
Yeah.
But the delays apparently were caused by late delivery of the engines to the ATR and the de Havillands, because the actual airframes were ready. So that's what caused the knock-on. And because Orini is a small airline, you don't have to have many few delayed aircraft to cause a problem, unlike, say, British Airways. You've got around 300 aircraft. But Orini's 2025 audit hasn't been completed yet, but they're saying that in quarter one of 2025, they got rid of 80% of the wet lease for those leased aircraft. So they're expected to bounce back hard into profit with their new fleet, which will be more efficient, and they'll have all this fog-busting stuff. Now, it's interesting. Orini is state-owned, but all the profits are ploughed back into the airline. So it does beg the question, if they start bouncing back into serious profit again, and they do it year on year like they were doing from 2022 onwards when their new fleet started coming in, it does raise the question, you know, could we do the same thing again and, you know,
well, the fact is that a bit like where Manx Airlines was, there was an existing airline that was purchased. It was purchased, as you say, by, I think it's what they call a state's trading supervisory board in Guernsey. So the Guernsey government bought it, but it was there already. Orini, I think we had the boss of Orini on a few years ago, and he said the main reason for Orini was because the sea between Alderney and Guernsey is so choppy that they couldn't guarantee there was going to be a ferry. So they had the tiny aircraft that used to leap between Alderney and Guernsey. And then obviously they started going to Jersey, and that's where the whole thing came. So it was an existing business that was bought by the government. Now, I mean, you say they're in profit now, but they made some thumping losses in the past 10, 15 years that had to be soaked up, and not least, of course, during COVID. It just depends, you know, what we, you know, we had the chance to get hold of an airline and we didn't seem to want it. But then again, you know, whether or not we could have outbid British Airways on it, as Terry Lydiard was saying yesterday, they bid 120 a share when they were trading at 30p. So whether or not the Isle of Man government would have done that. It's one of those things. Actually getting something started like that will be inordinately expensive. But it's a chance. And whether or not, I mean, as Terry was explaining yesterday about predatory pricing, we're always going to be at the mercy of somebody like EasyJet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it begs a couple of questions. It's in, you know, Terry Lydiard spoke about the slots into Heathrow yesterday. A prime one, say an early morning or a late afternoon, you know, the prime slots, they're now worth $100 million. You know, like a landing and a takeoff is $100 million each slot now. So they'd be worth quite a bit of money now. An ATR aircraft with discounts is looking at about $12 million each. But you see, you know, I've got this beer my bonnet about getting rid of net zero. If we're going to be spending $500 million or more on interconnectors and these wind farms, what kind of an airline could we set up if we just said, look, you know what, we'll just service the power station for $50 million and then just spend the difference, $450 million is going to get you a lot of aircraft. I mean, you wouldn't have to have a lot of aircraft, and also you wouldn't necessarily have to go into Heathrow, because these this slot bidding that goes on is really the prime ones. But if you had like the Twin Otter that Guernsey's looking at, you could get into Blackpool with that, and there's no slot bidding for those smaller airports. So you could go to Stansted or Southend-on-Sea, and Gatwick is a tenth of Heathrow for the slots. So I don't know, it's like, you know, it's a case of what's our priority with spending at the moment?
Well, as I say, reading between the lines, it would take somebody to come along, or an entity to come along, to say, say, we'd like to create an airline that possibly might be the Manx national airline. We'll run it ourselves for a few years, and if we can make a go of it, then it's going to be up for sale. Now, quite how you'd find a group of people who would do that, I don't know. But obviously there's a need, because as Terry was saying yesterday, a lot of those smaller airports we just don't go into anymore, because the Bristol flights from EasyJet twice a week killed off the Gloucester flights. As you say, we don't go to Blackpool anymore, and there are lots of other small... I saw the other day Eastern Airlines went bust the other day, and they used to fly into Castle Donington years ago from the Isle of Man. Since COVID, aviation has changed enormously. And whether or not there are groups of people who will be willing to do that, or possibly approach the enterprise ministry here on the island to say, but as it stands at the moment, one thing is sure, we don't have the air connections that we used to have on the Isle of Man.
And one of the things that you always rightly say is it's not just about the cost of putting the airline together, it's the intangibles. I mean, you'll remember that the Whisper Jet, you were almost guaranteed you'd be on that 5 to 7 flight in the morning, and you could be in a meeting in London for 9, yeah. And you could almost set your watch by the plane going up and over Castletown. So there's that. What's the value of having? People say, oh, it's great to have a 30 quid flight with EasyJet, but everyone's going the day before because you don't go on the same day because there's so many cancellations these days. Yeah. Imagine if you could say, right, book in the 7 o'clock for a 12 o'clock departure somewhere, and you knew pretty much that you're going to be good, especially if we had an ATR thing with fog busting, the infrared, so you can see through the fog.
That's a very good point. It used to be a lot more reliable than it is now. And as you say, I got a message in from Bernard, who dropped a note in just to say, yes, we used to have air connections that were adult and timely and businesslike. Nowadays, as you say, now having to go the day before or having to explain and to apologise to business colleagues who may be flying in that it's the Isle of Man way. Well, it never used to be, did it?
No, and free dark chocolate, three legs mint chocolates. I remember those.
Yes, all right. Good to hear from you. Thanks, Julian.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
All right, here's Robert with us now. You started this yesterday about Manx Airlines, Robert.
Oh, don't talk about the three chocolates.
What should
don't
we talk
about the three-legged chocolate?
What should we talk about?
I was just going to help out Julian. One of his searches, because I know he used ChatGPT and things like that. I was just curious, just on a search. You know how they're in, like they do at most parliaments, whereby they say give way and can you just give leave to let me intervene on that and stuff like that. I'm just wondering if that's improved over the years, because that is the basis of democracy, surely, because when you've got more interventions and you've got more people saying, well, can you give way and can we add this to it and all the rest of it? I'm just curious if Julian could go back to ChatGPT and check the records and just see if that's actually the case.
Well, I wonder. Well,
do you think it's improved? Well, do you think democracy's improved or not improved, Andy?
I think we get the democracy we deserve, Robert. You know, right. Remember, I'm a firm believer, for good or bad, that the people are always right. Vox populi. The people, by definition, can't be wrong because it's public opinion. And you know, when the people decide who's going to be elected, that must be the right thing because the public has done it. Now, the fact that most of the public in some cases don't bother, well, that's down to them. You know, if they don't want to engage in it, they really can't complain afterwards if they don't like it.
Yeah, very true, very true. I think in terms of like whether or not we're getting rebels in the system anymore, I think the days of Peter Caron and all the rest of it are gone now. I think a lot of people are just, you know, going along with the measure of it and all the rest of it to get their pay and stuff like that. I think, without doing them a disservice, there are some good ones in there, but a lot of them tend to just say, oh, much as much trade, we'll just go along with it, you know, and they just intervene on, I mean, a lot of the UK legislation is just, you know, rubber stamped, isn't it? Let's face it.
Okay. All right. Good to hear from you. Thanks, Robert.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay. Yes, this question about democracy is it always comes up, and, you know, what is democracy and are things as good as they ever used to be? Well, we'll know, won't we? We're counting down to the general election 2026. It's going to be on. Polls open 8 a.m. Thursday 24th of September and close at 8 p.m. And then you, if you're over 16, will have your say. On the 13th of August, Thursday 13th, the House of Keys is dissolved. And on Wednesday 26th of August, candidate nominations stop. And then heads down and through to the election. Then we'll see. Whether democracy has improved on the Isle of Man, I suppose, depends what measure you use, but there have been some recent reforms aimed at making the system more open and accountable. Timwell's approved changes on how members of LegCo are chosen, including requiring candidates to have public support and to declare interest before election, which was intended to improve transparency and accountability. And again, many politicians have tried to reform LegCo, which, of course, at the moment is elected by members of the House of Keys. Whether or not they would be get a public mandate, whether or not that will ever happen, well, there doesn't seem to be any move towards that. Certainly, it could be said that some MHKs would resent having island-wide politicians having an island-wide mandate as opposed to a constituency mandate. The Keys, the Isle of Man's already got that relatively low voting age of 8 of 16 now, and the fully elected Keys is obviously a democratic feature of the Isle of Man. Voter turnout in Keys has fallen in recent years, which official reports have described as a concern for democratic engagement. So there have been some reforms to improve transparency and accountability. Participation levels remain an ongoing concern to Timbald and to people who report on elections. And certainly you've heard me talk when we go take Man in Line out to the schools, asking the students in years 12 and 13 what they think and how they get it. Well, of course, they don't get taught anything. There's no Manx politics taught in schools. That's one reason is because they have to be completely neutral. And anything that a teacher says to pupils could be described as being biased. So they don't do it. They learn very little Manx constitutional history in our schools, and certainly very little politics, and very few of the MHKs actually visit schools. So we've got 16-year-olds with a vote, most of whom, it's fair to say, don't really know what to do with it, apart from what they read and hear on social media. You got any thoughts on this? Has the existing legislation ever been used to stop protesting at an abortion clinic? This is talking about Michelle Haywood and this restricted spaces bill. I think it's more overreach by the government. This is Terry who said, well, actually, I think the Isle of Man does have a legal access zone around Nobles Hospital under the Abortion Reform Act, which I think was 2019. It makes it an offence to interfere with or repeatedly approach people about abortion with 100 metres after a police warning. According to Timwell reports and legislation, the law allows police to warn people first and then take action. If behaviour continues, it allows injunctions through the High Court. Based on the latest publicly available information from the constabulary in court reporting, there's no confirmed public record of anybody being prosecuted in court on the island specifically for breaching the abortion access zone so far. So the power exists in law, but no clear evidence that it's been used for a local prosecution. What on earth is going on in Peel? This dispute appears to be continuing to unfold with fresh claims and counterclaims of who did what to whom, who didn't do it, and what did or didn't happen at a recent meeting. Katrina Baptist, the commissioner, has raised concerns about governance, transparency and how decisions are recorded, while Peel Town Commissioners has disputed aspects of her account. So former MHK, well, veteran MHK and former commissioner Hazel Hannon says she supports Katrina Baptist, suggesting that they reflect on her experience in local government. Hazel Hannon.
I mean, I have experience of asking a question about the way that the minutes were written, and only to be screamed at by the clerk because he accused me of asking a question all the time. You know, it's not the clerk's meeting, it's the commissioner's meeting, and it's the commissioner's to make sure that things are carried out. And the comments of Katrina just brought it back to me, the difficulties that I had. Now, the commissioners have responded, but in less than 24 hours, it seems incredible that they had a meeting at such short notice. In the response from the commissioners, and it is written by the clerk, and quoted standing orders, yes, they're not abided by, and the other documents also, I would say, are not abided by. The statement that Peel Town Commissioners have put out and said there will be an internal investigation, I would say it must be an external investigation into Peel Town Commissioners. There is a necessity by local authorities to have internal investigations because it keeps things quiet then.
Any thoughts? Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Steve says the plan is to sacrifice the island's energy security and buy an airline, a business fraught with huge and potential risk. It's a bizarre idea, says Steve. And a message in from Clive, who said, what's going on? Everything's what's going on today. What's going on with the Northern Civic Amenity site at Balladool? Well, it's been taken over. A company called Manx Rock Limited have won the tender to operate the Northern Civic Amenity site. When are the gates going to open? We don't know. Somebody's won the right to run it, but we don't know when they're going to open it. And importantly, if you're in the north, where do you take your recyclables when the site's still closed? Well, elsewhere, I think you can take them elsewhere. I think they're accepting stuff here, there. Well, as soon as we know when Balladool's going to open, then we'll tell you. And a message in from Frank said, you've not congratulated the Southern Young Farmers. Oh, really? Well, I will do it then. Well done to the Southern Young Farmers, who won this year's Young Farmers Concert, to Caesar Kermode and the rest of them in the Southern Young Farmers. Well done to them. It's their 80th anniversary this year, so all the very best to them. And this is Mary, who dropped a note into me. Thank you, Mary, who said, for several months I've been attempting to book sailings from Dublin for my brother and his friends who were coming for the racing period in August. When the required dates are shown on the timetable or input, the message on the site says there are no sailings on this date and provides alternative dates, including Larne, miles away. When I checked the reservations, I was told that negotiations were ongoing with Dublin Port about the times the Bend will be able to sail to and from there. Steam Packet aren't being honest with their passengers and are refusing to post a notice on the site to say the timetable published has not yet been agreed with Dublin. So would-be visitors from Ireland will assume that they'll only be able to travel via Larne when the Bend sailings commence. Due to its location, Larne is not a viable option for foot passengers from Southern Ireland. I have brought the situation to the notice of the DOE, who've contacted the Steam Packet but haven't heard anything. I believe the situation will be causing the Isle of Man to lose visitors. It's certainly embarrassing for my brother, who's booked accommodation for his party and now is unable to provide details of their sailings. Steam Packet this week's posted news on the Larne sailings. They should have taken the opportunity to update their customers regarding the Dublin sailings. It's obviously very embarrassing for the Steam Packet, but they need to admit the situation without further delay. And that's in from Mary, and I just wonder whether that's affected you, if you know somebody, or indeed you are trying to travel to the Republic, or you've got friends or relatives who are trying to come from the Republic to the Isle of Man. The text Mr. 696 says, Andy, the art of letter writing has become a dying art, mainly due to our post office. Really? I wrote a 4-page letter, folded it in two, placed it in a normal white envelope, and took it to the post office to post. The worker took my envelope and tried to push it through a slit in their letter-sized cardboard. It didn't fit through the slit mark for letters. I wasn't charged the standard 90, it's a pound now, isn't it? It cost me £1.95 to it was a large letter then, was it? It cost me £1.95 to post it to an island address. The slit in the cardboard letter was just thick enough to post an envelope with a single piece of paper in it. What a joke. No wonder letter writing is fast disappearing. I hope he gets a decent pay rise this April from a disappointed customer. Texter 696. Have you come across that? Are you a letter writer? Yesterday, says Andy, Michelle Haywood inferred that the buses could still be on strike during TT. Why does the government seem to take such a lack of interest in the Isle of Man's economy being damaged irreparably? Also, will we see Bus Vanin operating cruise tour buses, or is that another part of our economy the government isn't interested in the future? Good point, because Bus Vanin had the contract, didn't they, to ferry around bus passengers. We see them from up here on Douglas Head. You can see the buses picking up the passengers. I wonder whether that will be Opal will soak all that up, but it remains to be seen. And B, on politics, says Andy, Brian's point on MHK's pay settlement niggles me. When they wanted to increase the minimum wage by 10%, they told small businesses they had 6 months to face the difficulties and finance the extra outgoings. Well, any MHK elected has 5 years to get ready for the fact that they may now be may not be re-elected. They should get very little, says B. Fair is fair. Well, somebody's got to agree to it, because at the moment that's in the terms and conditions, that they get 6 months' money if they stand for election. Any sitting MHK stands for re-election and doesn't get elected, they get 6 months' money. In the 1950s, the airport check-in was in the last house in the Crescent at Derby Haven. Everybody was weighed and seated accordingly to balance the plane. It's after we spoke to Terry Lydiard yesterday. Right, Man in Line's on till one today. Let's go to Liz with us now. Hi, Liz.
Hello. A while ago, I did go to the steam packet and I got them to print me off all the sailings from and to and from Ireland for this year, and they've given me up to 27 as well. And in April, I don't think there is one sailing, not one going to Dublin. They're all going to land. The first sailing is May the 24th of the 5th at 7 o'clock. That is the first sailing to Dublin. All the rest are land. And like you say, for people who live in the south, like I was born in the south, I've lived here for nearly 60 years. But, it would be very difficult to get to Larne for 10, 15. That's yours, Ellen.
Yeah.
Anyway, if anybody wants, contact the steam packet. They will print you off all the sailings to and from Ireland. And like I said, there's nothing going in April to Dublin. All is to Larne. It's difficult enough getting from Belfast to Dundalk, because you have got to get a taxi into Belfast. Then you got to get, i.e., a train or a coach to take you. And some of them, there's direct coaches, but they're only going to Dublin. So where I was born and Dundalk, which is halfways, they do not stop. So you have to get maybe a train to Newry, then a bus from Newry to Dundalk. The sailings aren't very good. And since the steam packet was brought over by the Isle of Man, the prices have gone through the roof. Even to Liverpool, £67.50 return to Liverpool. And I booked that ages ago, so I'm not going till April. Okay, thank you.
Good to hear from you, Liz. Thank you.
Looking to make the most of your savings? Cornerstone Bank offer a range of savings options, from fixed terms of 6 months to 3 years to variable rate notice accounts with notice periods of 95 to 180 days. And choose monthly or annual interest, whatever works for you. For the latest rates and an application form, check out cornerstonebank.co.im. Cornerstone Bank, celebrating 90 years of community, heritage and connection. Here for the journey. All deposits are subject to status, terms and conditions apply. No early withdrawals permitted. Qualifying deposits made with Cornerstone Bank are covered by the Isle of Man Depositors Compensation Scheme as set out in the Depositors Compensation Scheme Regulations 2010.
SMS Trading, new and second-hand furniture from flat pack to fully built. See our range at 3 St Paul Square, Ramsey. All island delivery and man-in-a-van service available. Call SMS Trading on 315151 or find SMS Trading on Facebook.
We make oil heating easy with our range of services. Whether it's our free smart tank monitoring systems or just our efficient all-island deliveries, Ellen Vanin Fuels has it covered. Call us on 844-000 to find out more.
What ho, Jeeves? Tell me, what's all this ballyhoo I hear about a beer festival?
I believe, sir, those fine fellows from Camera are putting it on from the 9th to the 11th of April at the Villa Marina.
What? With oodles of lovely real ale, cider, perry and whatnot?
Indubitably, sir.
I say, Jeeves, top hole. Make a note in my diary, would you? And be sure to wake me early on the day, say about noon, and we'll jolly well hop, skip and jump on down there.
Your wish, sir, is my command.
A few weeks ago, we heard two of the debates from the special International Women's Day Junior Tynwald sitting, at which students from the island's secondary schools and UCM raised several issues that concerned them. There were three other debates on legal protections and accountability measures to address gender-based violence, mental health and neurological conditions, and education in gender discrimination, which we'll hear in full on this week's Perspective. That's Perspective this Sunday at 12 on Manx Radio with me, Phil Gore. Powerful comment from voices which sadly all too often go unheard.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
24 minutes before one, Anthony said, does anybody recall the original speak Liverpool Airport where Manx Airlines Viscount used to fly to Ronaldsway? Were the prices low comparable to the EasyJet now, do you know? It'd be interesting to know how much it used to be to fly from Liverpool to the Isle of Man way back when. I mean, obviously, it's not a direct comparison, but it would be nice to know. And I just wonder what you think about Julian's point. The fact is that with EasyJet, you may get low prices, but you may have to go a day early because you never know when the air traffic controllers aren't going to be there. No fault of theirs, because they have to take certain breaks, but also that EasyJet may just be late coming in. So is it going to be worth, or would it be worth, paying a premium price to know that you could actually travel on time? Or are you happy to take your chances at a cheap rate? Mark's with us now. Hi, Mark.
Yeah, hi, Andy. I'm actually missed... Michelle Hay was on yesterday, and sorry, I missed the show. But it was one question sort of related to Michelle and probably the Department of Infrastructure. I noticed that Ed Miliband has brought forward the funding round for Contracts for Difference for all wind farms. So I think round 8 was meant to happen in 28, and he's brought it forward, as per I read in the paper, to the summer this year. Which basically means that, my understanding, and I'd love to, maybe the new DOI minister could clarify this. My understanding is that was the part of the funding for the Moor Vanin wind farm, because as Alf Cannon has confirmed, the Moor Vanin wind farm will only go ahead if we get subsidy contract for difference from the UK. And now they've actually brought forward this to this summer. I very much doubt that the DOI and other sort of departments are going to, and even Ofsted, are going to have their ducks in a row to qualify for that, which probably means, if that is the case, just using logic, if the time the next funding round actually takes place, you're probably going to have a new government in the UK, which would probably be less favourable to the wind farms. So, I mean, those who are against the wind farm, I'd say this seems like the nail in the coffin, but it would be great to get clarification from somebody in the know from the government.
You'll know all about this. So to the uninitiated, to the layperson, Mark, could you explain what a contract for difference is?
So basically, if the wind farm developers, operators, they require subsidy from the UK government, and they basically guarantee a minimum price for the for their electricity that they generate. And if they don't get that subsidy, the wind farms just can't operate. So unless the UK government can give subsidy to Moor Vanin, it won't go ahead. And the fact that they brought it forward, the funding round, because it was 28, they had time to get all that, I bring the rules and the regs and all that sort of stuff in place. That's been brought forward now. So I very much doubt the Isle of Man government and even Ofsted will have their ducks in a row. So it'd be quite interesting. And the unfortunate thing is that, you know, this administration has backed the wind farm and decided not to proceed with the gas field. So basically, it looks like both opportunities are lost. It'd be great if the MHKs. Michelle actually listens into this program. Maybe she's probably more in the know, and she could update us whether this is actually going to affect the funding of the Moor Vannin.
And through all this, and this thing about the UK giving subsidies bluntly to the Isle of Man, politically, nobody's ever explained, no politician has ever explained why on earth the UK government would give subsidies to the Isle of Man.
Well, exactly. And that's I think it's a hope and a prayer, really. I mean, I attended the conference a while ago where Ofsted were presenting, and they confirmed that the Isle of Man government would get a share of the revenue. What that share would be, that's never been alluded to, which basically means that the Isle of Man would not be charging a ground rent, but would be creaming off the top on the revenue. But the Ofsted would still depend on contracts of difference or subsidy from the UK government. So it seems to me, logically, if you just join all the dots, it ain't going to happen, which would be great for people who live on the east coast of the island who don't want their views spoiled. But if you look at it from a sort of a business point of view, you know, this administration has backed one horse rather than keeping two horses in the race, both the gas field and the wind farms. And we've lost the opportunity for potentially two revenue streams. And now it looks to me, and I'd love to be corrected, that we're going to have zero revenue streams. And it just seems, it'd be good to get clarity on that, Andy.
Well,
Michelle can call in and clarify.
We'll try and find out. Thanks for calling today, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Good to hear from you. I got a message also in from Jerry regarding this wind farm, the potential Moor Vannin wind farm, the Ofsted one, which is going to be just a few miles off our east coast. We'll ferry electricity back to Lancashire, and then at some point there will be an interconnector from Lancashire that may or may not land around Cradle Glen, and then will feed into our system, so we'll get some electricity from it at the moment. And Jerry's just saying this all seems to be just shrouded in mystery at the moment. Jerry just said, I'm sure they know what they're doing, but they're trying to convince us that this is the thing to do. Now, it may well be the thing to do. It may be made absolutely revolutionise our revenues and give us net zero electricity. But at the moment, it seems, Jerry just said, like they're saying this by crossing their fingers behind their back and hoping it's all going to happen. It is big business. I mean, it's big business. It's a huge business. But at the moment, we're at the end of it. And we don't quite know how it's going to end. Maybe there are people who do know how it's going to end, but we don't. Before anything else, and this is probably the most important thing I've said today, I just want you to take a moment and stand to attention, because I want to wish one of our colleagues at Manx Radio a very happy birthday. His name is Ian Cottier. And Ian Cottier, presenter of Time for Brass, every Monday evening, 9 through till 10. Ian celebrates his 90th birthday today. He's been presenting Time for Brass for half of his life, 45 years this year. Maybe a record in the British Isles for the same presenter presenting the same music show, and I'm willing to bet that nobody's presented a brass band show for longer, as long as that. Of course, he was headmaster at St. Ninian's High School for many years. Came up with the idea for the show and has been presenting it week in, week out ever since. You can hear him next Monday at 9 o'clock, and also as a podcast. So happy birthday to Ian Cottier from all your Manx Radio colleagues. We had a bit of a do last week for him. Of course, he'll be in every week presenting the show. So, and I don't know whether you recall, but he presented us with a lovely lovely feature a few weeks ago on Max Radio when he was playing for Russian, I think it was Russian United he was playing for, when they got thumped by RAF Derby. The RAF Derby team was featured Warren Bradley, who at the time, I think, was playing for Bishop Auckland as an amateur, and he was spending some time at RAF Derby. But he subsequently went on to play for Manchester United in England. And as Ian recalls, he ran him off the pitch. Anyway, all that aside, Ian Cottier, let's just stand and pay tribute to a 90th birthday today. Ian Cottier, Time for Brass on Max Radio. Happy birthday, Ian.
Quayside Tyre and Service Centre, where alongside quality tyres and excellent servicing, you'll find a whole lot more besides. Choose Quayside Tyre and Service Centre for diagnostics, cam belt changes and aircon, along with laser wheel alignment and all your mechanical and electrical repairs. With courtesy cars available, excellent friendly service and competitive prices, visit Quayside Tyre and Service Centre on South Quay Industrial Estate, and you'll soon be back on the road. Quayside!
Geoffrey, I do love the view from our new slide and patio doors from Spectrum Windows, with trees, fields and Snaefell in the distance.
Yes, and I've got a smashing view of Madeline. What a beauty.
Geoffrey!
Don't worry. Madeline's my new prize pig. Look, she's as happy as a pig in muck.
Oh, Geoffrey, she is a pig in muck.
Improve your outlook with sliding patio doors. Visit Spectrum Windows, the showroom, Derby Road, Ramsey, or call 817777.
Save 17% on the Loganair Tartan Sale with promo code SALE17. Book now at loganair.co.uk. TCs and exclusions apply, subject to availability.
As a long-established firm, Mann Benham offer a comprehensive range of legal services assisting individuals and businesses, from sole traders to the island's largest employers. Mann Benham have built up a reputation for giving a fast, efficient, cost-effective service with a personal edge. From buying and selling property to drawing up leases, employment matters, contracts and more. Call Mann Benham for your free consultation on 639 350.
Mann Benham, here for you.
Corkhill Storage, Corkhill Storage.
Call Corkhill Removals and Storage today. We'll store your goods day after day. Safe and secure around the clock. When it comes to storage, we do the lot. Click CorkhillRemovals.com.
Keen to end a run of three straight defeats, FC Isle of Man are back in action this weekend for their penultimate home game in the NWCFL Premier Division this season.
Touch towards goal here, bit of a scramble. Crook, who manages to swivel and put it into the top corner.
The Ravens return to the ball on Saturday to face a City of Liverpool side fighting for survival in their battle against relegation.
What a game. Is that the essence of what football is about?
Join me, Rob Pritchard and Darren Timpson for FC Isle of Man versus City of Liverpool, kicking off at 6 p.m. this Saturday. Manx Radio will be bringing new full live match commentary on our DAB and AM1368 channels.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
13 minutes now before one. Why do MHKs get a full pension after two terms of office, let alone the 6 month redundancy as well, says Julie? Well, Julie, it's really simple. It's their terms and conditions. Their terms and conditions, and we live under the law of contract. So that's what it is. Somebody would have to want to change that, Julie. And Sue said, I agree with Howard, who mentioned a few days ago, well, this was about the 6 months payoff for MHKs, sitting MHKs who don't get re-elected. But we'll point out that an MHK who does a good job will be voted in again. One who doesn't do a good job has effectively been sacked and therefore doesn't deserve any severance package. Well, again, Sue, whether or not they deserve it, their terms and conditions say that they're due it. And Trev says an MHK can rerun for election but put no enthusiasm into getting re-elected. In fact, make sure that they don't get back in and then take 6 months' pay. It did seem to happen last time, 5 years ago, avoiding public appearances or going around knocking on doors. Just a thought and something that seemed to be happening in some areas. So just to be clear on this, a sitting MHK, let's just say the election's in September. If they don't wish to stand, they don't wish to stand and they don't get any money. If they do stand and don't get re-elected, they get 6 months' money. That's the way the situation is at the moment. Of course, it may be that they don't want to get re-elected and get re-elected anyway. Them's the breaks. And Bonzo's with us now. Hi, Bonzo.
Yes, yes, listening to Mark talking about more Vanin and contracts for difference. This wouldn't be Mark Robert Shaw, son of Chris Robert Shaw, Kroger's, former Kroger shareholder, would it?
Don't know. I don't know, Barnes. Everybody's equal here.
Well, if it is, I think that's something that should be clarified. As we go to CFD, etc., well, actually, I'm on the Contracts for Difference mailing list. And one thing I've just received is further refinements to the CFD scheme for allocation round 8, government response to legislative proposals. And on the last page of it, next steps. The government will bring forward secondary legislation to amend the allocation regulations, those are the CFD allocation regulations 2014, as set out in the government response. Subject to parliamentary approval, they aim to have that in regulation in force before allocation round 8 opens to allocations. We will provide further clarity on the detailed administrative arrangements in the contract allocation framework before the AR8 allocation window opens. We will also work with NISO on guidance for potential applicants to support the application of the new legislative requirements. The government continues to analyse the responses to the other proposals in the December 2025 consultation and will publish a government response setting out its decisions in due course. So the actual allocations, the actual regulations regarding the application process are under consideration for some change. So given that they will want to actually go through the planning process before they make their application into the allocation round, I think some of the arguments that Mark was saying about governments not being of a sympathetic stripe or the allocation process collapsing. From my first reading of this, I don't think that's particularly valid. And other issues such as the ground rent. Now, yes, Ofsted are trying to do a negotiating position whereby we get a percentage of the revenue from the power generation rather than all the income coming from the actual ground rent, which is not a position that I would agree with. The whole point of it is to have stable, dependable revenue, not dependent on how much power you sell. Everyone else around the coast uses that kind of ground, red system, seabed leasing. So that's what we should get, and we should get a reasonable market price for that. I mean, with some of the figures I've been hearing, I must admit, if I were Chief Minister, I would send Ofsted packing and tell them that we're not any more negotiating with Ofsted UK, that we'd only negotiate with the group and with the actual head of the group. He can get his people now and come over from Denmark and remember that he's negotiating with a nation state. No, and not just some sort of country bumpkins who are going to sell him something for 4 magic beans and a turnip.
And I think that's one of the concerns that I'm getting from the Manx public is they don't want, and again, I may be comparing apples and oranges, but they don't want another Liverpool landing stage situation.
Well, I don't think it's going to be a question of the Manx government picking up any vast tabs. Everything in the whole process, really, except for some officer time, some legislative time, obviously involved in the planning process and things, which is a slight expense, but that's a very small fraction of what that would be. We wouldn't be liable for any large bills,
right?
And certainly, I would have thought nowadays people would be very, very wary about trying to make us liable for any large.
Well, the comparison was the fact that there was the perception that we sent inexperienced civil servants to Liverpool to negotiate with Peel Group, who are a lot more experienced and knew all about the Liverpool landing stage. And obviously, we're now in dispute with various people over it, and we're up to our neck in nearly £100 million.
Yes, well, now they should have understood, I think, that, you know, half-tide dock, and it's been disused for, how long? Because, of course, the 100 million hasn't been for the shed. It's been to actually repair the entire damn dock.
Yeah.
So we were sold the pub. And on also, we still don't have the details of the initial agreement for lease and what kind of revenues are supposed to be from that. But again, it may have been that the similar people who went to see Peel Courts about Liverpool were people who met with Alstead and decided to
It's fair to assume that Alstead are very experienced about negotiating leases for seabeds.
Oh, yes. And,
and we're not.
They'll try and... They'll try and get what they can, but even the most cursory research would have seen that, you know, AFLs when, you know, 10 years you were getting at the time that they were negotiating, I think something like, you know, 50-75 million a year. There was the actual big auction that had the two very large wind farms over in, you know, further in the Irish Sea towards Liverpool. But one of those has been that they've handed back the lease because it was at the top of the market and they paid far too much for it. And with the delays in actually getting the thing up and running, not built, but actually connected to the UK grid in order to sell into it, you know, the numbers weren't adding up.
Okay. All right.
But they were paying something like 200 million a year.
Appreciate it, Bonzo. Thanks for being with us today.
Okay, then. Cheers. Bye.
Got a message in from the steam packet about that Dublin sailings to Dublin Port. They say it's the result of ongoing negotiations with Dublin Port over berth slots due to circumstances out of Dublin Port's control. It's actually related to Holyhead link span issues. A lot of work going on behind the scenes to get it over the line. They're due to make a statement about the Dublin sailing shortly, and they're hoping to have an update on the sailings next week. I'd like to apologise to customers for any inconvenience due to the ongoing delays in opening the sailings for booking. So, next week is the word on Dublin Port from the steam packet. That's it. Thanks to Chris on the phones today. Thursday tomorrow, back with another open line. WINT